Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Up Stage. Rob Brown, the great Milonzo, and you. Be a part of the show. 844-326-3663. 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E. That's the number to call the show. That's the number to text the show on the Hub City Spartanburger text line. I had gone back and forth on whether or not to bring it up, because it's not really like sports story. It's kind of a sports adjacent story. This Mark Sanchez story is friggin' weird, dude. Like, it's just, I don't know what other word to describe it as other than
wild
weird.
Hell, I knew what you were talking about before you even finished.
Yep.
Yeah, just because I just read some of the details. It's
weird.
Yeah, it is.
So there was a if you missed it or maybe avoided it, which I get. News broke yesterday that former Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez had been stabbed in some sort of incident. If I recall correctly, I believe it was in Indianapolis. And so Mark Sanchez got stabbed, and everybody's like, yo, what the hell happened? But then we started getting more details about what the hell happened. Apparently, there was a 69-year-old man who was driving a truck and parked his truck in an alley while he was the initial story was it was like a DoorDash driver, like a Uber Eats driver, like a food delivery driver. But it turns out he was driving a grease truck. Basically, his job was to drive a truck to different restaurants and collect their used cooking oil for proper disposal. And apparently, the 69-year-old truck driver was approached by Mark Sanchez, who apparently was very drunk, and told the guy, you can't park here. The guy was like, yo, it's my job. Like, I have to park here. And then Sanchez attacked the guy, including, according to police reports, throwing him against a wall and then onto the ground, at which point the man pulled a knife and stabbed Mark Sanchez and sent him to the hospital in critical condition. He's been upgraded to stable, but has also been charged with battery resulting in bodily injury, unauthorized entry of a motor vehicle, and public intoxication endangering the life of another, according to police affidavits.
Okay, so I've read a couple of reports. One said that the guy was trying to go to get security to come and say, this guy's being belligerent towards me, and that Sanchez actually got in his truck. Like he was trying to move his truck.
Yeah. It's I don't know, man. Like the whole thing is weird, dude. Like, I don't really have a take on it other than I don't know. It's sad. It is a sad story.
Where did
he
go to college at?
Mark Sanchez was a USC guy, wasn't he?
I can't remember.
I believe he was a USC guy.
I was just wondering if there's a pattern that, from where he
I mean, not, to, yeah. not that I am aware of. Yeah, he was a USC guy, 05 to 08. I am unaware. That's not to say no, but I'm unaware of one. I will also say that as somebody who is known to occasionally imbibe, man, like if this is what booze does to you, it's okay to stop. It's not just okay to stop. You should. If this is what it turns you into, stop. Like, this is, it's sad because,
well, he might end up in jail. So,
oh, I think he's going to end up in jail. And especially if this guy who the 69-year-old is not just in the hospital, but against my better judgment, because the internet is the internet, I just saw pictures of the guy in the hospital.
Yeah, I avoided that. I didn't want to see the pictures.
He is messed up, man. Like, he has got a slash from the corner of his lip to around his cheekbone that is deep. Like, you can see in there. It's, he got messed up.
According to the story, it like hit his tongue. It was in there. So, like, it's like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah. It's, I got nothing. Like, and it's obviously very sad.
You know, it pops up and you're like, what, who?
Yeah.
What was he doing? Where was he to get jumped? Talking about Sanchez. Cause immediately you think, it's somebody else jumped him or something. You don't realize that he escalated the situation, and according to witnesses, that was self-defense. The dude stabbing him.
So, as somebody who worked in TV news, I can tell you the reason that all went down. And by the way, there was this interesting other thing that happened. I mean, if this is interesting to you, somebody went on Reddit like 3 hours before this from an anonymous account. They were like, "Yo, I work for the PD." I think it was, Indianapolis PD. Mark Sanchez just got charged, but he's in the hospital. He's been stabbed, but it was because he did something. And everybody's like, okay, rando on the internet, whatever you're talking about. And then that story broke. From the journalist perspective, when you get a story that big about a guy that has the name recognition of a Mark Sanchez, you're going to get the result before you get the details. And just the way that the news works is you tell what you know, like you share what you know, and then you say updates to come. So when the news dropped, because the first thing everybody learned was Mark Sanchez got stabbed and went to the hospital, that wasn't like reporters trying to leave out the news. They would not have gotten what happened until they started getting police reports and witness statements from the whole thing. But when Mark Sanchez gets stabbed and go to the hospital, like that's what's going to be talked about. Like, that's kind of how it works. So I don't know, man. It's a wild story. If you struggle with booze, if you struggle with alcohol, like, get the help you need. There is no shame in it. There is no problem with it. Like, get the help that you need to stop. This was a cat who his NFL career got devolved into, oh, that's butt fumble guy. Like, that's what it was. It wasn't really even an awful career. It just wasn't what they drafted him to be out of USC. And Mark Sanchez had, it felt like, kind of turned it around in the TV world.
Not a bad guy to help call a football game.
No, he had turned it around. Like, I thought he was actually pretty good on TV. I'll give it a buck. Like, better than Tom Brady calling games. I thought Sanchez was good on TV, but obviously and clearly there were deeper problems than that. So again, like, if you struggle, get help. It is okay. There is no shame to it. There is nothing wrong with recognizing that sometimes you need help to get through a fight. And if that's the spot you are in, go find the help you need to win that fight. I have people in my family who have struggled with alcoholism and addiction, and so for some people, they don't get the help that they need, and it ends up putting them in a spot where it's too late. For a guy like Mark Sanchez, not only is it too late, but the guy threw away what was probably going to be a relatively long-lasting and lucrative television career, because nobody's hiring this guy after this, right? Like, it's one thing to do something that's kind of dumb. Like, you get a DUI or something, most people will give you, you know, go pay your debt to society, get yourself right, get cleaned up, whatever, and you'll get a second chance. I don't think you can give a second chance to a guy who viciously assaulted and put a 69-year-old man in the hospital, right? Like, you can't do it. This is the reason I still very much call Conor McGregor a piece of crap. Like, you punched an old man in a bar. That's irredeemable to me. So it's a sad story. Like I said, before something like this happens, go get the help that you need to get to win that fight, because it is, for many people, not one that you can win on your own, and it is not easy. So, you know, if you're in that spot, if it's a problem, I wish you the best. I hope that you get the help you need, and I hope you win that fight so that that doesn't play out the way that it did for Mark Sanchez. Get the help you need. There is no shame in it. All right, let's get into some other stuff that went down over the course of the weekend. Major League Baseball's postseason underway. We had all four Game 1s on Saturday. The AL Game 2s were yesterday. Blue Jays rout the New York Yankees. And the problem that the New York Yankees have is their best just went at it. That Max Fried got absolutely rocked by this team. And most of the teams that rely on the long ball, and we are talking about the Yankees, and have not been talking about relying on the long ball for the Blue Jays. This game going the other way was very interesting, especially with Treya Savage, who is a cat that, and I love this dude's story. This dude started the year off at the lowest level of minor league baseball, lowest level in the organization, and worked his way all of the way up to the majors, including getting a start yesterday against a very good New York Yankees team. This cat, getting his first postseason start, went out and K'd 11 yesterday. K'd 11 yesterday. Aaron Judge got twice in this game. This story was fantastic. 5.1 innings pitched, no hits, no runs, one walk, 11 strikeouts on 78 pitches. And to be honest with you, he could have probably finished the fifth, but he did get credited with the win. On the flip side, pretty easy to win a game when your team hits five big dongs out of 15 hits on the day. Like, this Toronto team, I think you have to say at this point, is scary. And oh, by the way, this is a team that, due to injuries and whatnot, had to leave a couple of their biggest names off of their ALDS roster, right? Like Scherzinger, not on this roster. They had to leave some of their big guys at home because of injuries and whatnot. And yet they still came out. Vladdy had three hits in this game. George Springer had a pair of games in this game. Varsho had four hits in this game. Clement had three hits in this game. Like, this team put on a show. And it creates a world where, in a best of five, to me, there is no path forward to the Yankees other than being able to go 2-for-2 back in New York and get this done, which I wish you the best. Your next matchup, Shane Bieber going to the bump to take on Carlos Rodon. And Rodon's a good pitcher. In fact, right now, if you want it, the Yankees' money line is minus 150 as a favorite. I'm at a point now where I'm kind of thinking I might take a little scratch out on Toronto as an outright winner at plus money. I think it's like plus 130 in this game. Why? Because they're hitting the baseball against everybody. They come up, they hit the Yankees well in game one. They hit the Yankees well in game two. You go back to Yankee Stadium, and here's the part that's interesting. Toronto's got a bigger ballpark than New York. New York is historically known for allowing specifically lefties to go yad, like, a lot. This is not, I don't think, the layup win in game three that a lot of the talking media believe it is. And again, I know a lot of the talking media is based off of the Northeast, especially in baseball, based off the Atlantic Coast, especially up towards the New England area. And so the lean is, especially with the Yankees doing what they did to the Bo Sox to get here, the lean, I think, is, oh, they're still New York. Aaron Judge is still there. Look, they needed Aaron Judge last night. They needed him certainly in game one, but they needed him badly last night. And dude has been striking out with guys in scoring position with some regularity in this postseason. Like, I'm not the guy that says your entire legacy is going to be predicated on what you do in the postseason, but obviously we'd be lying to say it has no impact, especially when you are the capitan, when you are the guy. This is the spot that you are supposed to be in. This is the spot where you are supposed to step up and be the leader. And Aaron Judge wasn't that guy. Like, I don't see a path back to this. Even if the Yankees do go 2-0 with the crib to take it back to game five in New York, good luck. Good luck. And then on the other side, Mariners 3, Tigers 2. Seattle ties this series back up at a game apiece. My thought going into that game yesterday was, if you cannot win this game with Tarek Skubal on the bump, and listen, Seattle has been good against Tarek Skubal, who has been the best pitcher in Major League Baseball this year, despite the fact that he had a real slow finish. Skubal went and got the win in the wild card round against the Guardians, the hottest team entering the postseason. And again, there are three things in this order that are your metric to a team's postseason success. Number one, the hottest team coming into the playoffs. Number two, pitching wins in the playoffs. And number three, if those two things are even, who puts the ball in play? Who sends the ball into a different county more often than they don't? If you can't win with Tarek Skubal, who is the best pitcher in baseball, if you can't win after you knocked off Cleveland, and again, they did climb game one, so like, let's not say they can't win. But in a spot last night with the opportunity to go up 2-0 on the road, have the next two back home, and it's best of five. You would have only needed to take one of the two at the crib. For Skubal to go out, give you seven innings, five hits, two runs, but you can't figure it out and get it done, that's just not good enough. Detroit had three hits last night. For a team that was rounding the bases against Cleveland to suddenly disappear. And the part that I think has got to be most frustrating if you're a Detroit fan, you had Luis Castillo at 50 pitches through, I think, 2.5 or 3 innings. He's at north of half of his pitch count through 3 innings. You've got to think, when you get into the back half of that Seattle bullpen, and it's a good bullpen, but it's not Luis Castillo. If you can get a couple off of Castillo and you can run him early, you give yourselves a very good chance to win, especially if I'm getting 7 innings and 97 pitches out of Tarek Skubal. I should win that game. But the fact that they didn't is the reason that I am going with Seattle out of the American League to the World Series. Polanco went yard twice. That's what they needed. Rodriguez had a double. Cal Raleigh had a double. Like, they hit the ball well last night. I think they had 8 hits in that game. If you can have Tarek Skubal come to the bump, you can either chase him. And again, they didn't really chase him. It's not like Skubal had a bad night. Gave up 5 hits and 2 runs. Like, that's a solid stat line with 9 Ks through 7 innings. It's not great, but it should be good enough to win against the better teams in the AL, and Seattle is certainly one of them. If Detroit can't win in that spot, I don't see how they win the series. Like, they will need to sweep back home in Detroit if they want to win the best of five, 3-1. If they allow this to come back, and this is by Seattle just taking one of the two, if they allow this game or this series to go back to Seattle, Detroit cannot move on. And for a team that for a very long time held the best record in Major League Baseball before they absolutely crashed out down the stretch, you want to talk about a disappointing end of the season. All right, we're obviously keep you up to date on this one as it plays out. NL Game 2s will take place today, 6:08 tonight. Blake Snell versus Jesus Luzardo, as the Dodgers are on the road at the Phillies in NLDS Game Number 1. Chicago on the road against their NL Central rivals, the Milwaukee Brewers. First pitch in that one at 9:08 p.m. tonight. Shoto Imanaga on the bump against Aaron Ashby for Milwaukee. The Dodgers, -135 favorites on the road at Philly. The Brew Crew, -125 favorites at the crib tonight. AL Game 2, or Game 3, pardon me, will be on Tuesday in 4:08 and 8:08 on the PM if you're setting your calendar now. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here in just a minute, we got into the AP Top 25 back in hour number one. Let's take a look up and down the teams that consist in or make up the AP Top 25. Man, I'm struggling. I don't know why. We're going to get it together. All right, we're going to grab an orange slice and a Gatorade. We're going to regroup, reevaluate, and when we come back, we're hammering the AP Top 25. That's next on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The AP Top 25 has Ohio State still on top. They do drop some first-place votes back to now number two, Miami, who leapfrogs Oregon. They fall back to number three. Ole Miss, Texas A&M move up a spot into number four and five. Oklahoma, Indiana, both ahead of number eight, Alabama. Texas Tech now inside the top nine with that 5-0 record, one spot ahead of 4-1, number 10, Georgia. Rounding out the top 15, LSU, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, Mizzou, and Michigan. Notre Dame has won three in a row. Climb up to number 16, up five spots. Same for 17, Illinois, 18, BYU, 19, Virginia, all up five spots. Vandy, after their loss on the road at Alabama, a lot of respect for the Doors. They fall just four spots down to number 20, one spot ahead of now 4-1 Arizona State, up four spots as well. Iowa State takes their first loss on the season. They are now 5-1. After they get beat by the Cincinnati Bearcats on the road, they fall eight spots down to number 22, the biggest fall in the top 25. They are right ahead of now, ranked at number 23, Memphis, were unranked last week. So was South Florida, 4-1. With a win over Florida, now at number 24. Florida State, after their second consecutive loss, both of them to teams that either were or are now top 25 teams. They lose to Virginia on Friday. They turn around, give Miami hell in the fourth quarter, but we're too far behind at that point. Florida State drops down to number 25. Out of the rankings, Penn State and Texas. Not just out of the rankings, but Penn State and Texas received fewer votes than Mississippi State and Washington in the top 25. And, you know, this is an interesting conversation to have after the interesting conversation that we had last week when the commissioner of the Athletic Conference, a conference that has a multitude of top 25 teams, a conference that has wins over the ACC, wins over the Big Ten, a win over the SEC as well. This is a conference, the American Conference, that is very interesting. Navy is 3-0 in the conference. They are 5-0 overall. Memphis is 6-0. North Texas is 5-0. South Florida is 4-1, ranked in the top 25. Tulane, 4-1, just outside the top 25 with an ACC win. This conference is interesting. And it's interesting because it looks like it is becoming increasingly more likely that they will be sending one of the the G5 representative to the college football playoffs at the end of the year. So, what stands out the most about this AP Top 25 poll? What jumps out? I will start with this. The interesting conversation I was alluding to there was the commissioner of the American Conference saying last week that we need to either do away with or we need to modernize preseason polls. And I agree with that. How do we modernize it? I genuinely do not know. Because when you are talking about college football teams that have the opportunity to, or I guess I should say, not even opportunity. That might not be the right word. When college football teams are in a spot where many of them do not round out their roster until the spring, and we don't have preseason games like we do in the NFL that we can take a gander at and say, all right, yeah, they were just playing this outgunned, outmanned opponent in a preseason game, but they did this, and here's what we saw. You have spring camp and fall camp. And that's it to make a decision. The commissioner of the American Conference said last week, The problem that you bump into is that these preseason polls are effectively media members gambling, right? Except instead of gambling money, they are gambling, to some degree, their reputation, I guess. Although at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter all that much. Now, I do think that there should be, and I don't even know what this looks like. This is just a spitball. There should be some level of accountability for AP votes, right? Like, if you are just egregiously wrong, there should be a way that we rotate and roll off and on guys and gals annually. Like, there should be a way or a reason that you're an AP poll voter, but it's for like 2 years, and then you're off for 2 years. And we should have a way to hold people accountable, like the young lady we talked about last week when Bama beat Georgia and they were right around each other in the poll. And she wrote an article that said, "I'm still putting Georgia ahead of Alabama." Yeah, but why though? Like, it's one thing if a team goes from, you know, if a team's unranked and then they turn around and they jump to 24 and the team that they beat was ranked number 5 and they fall down to like number 12. It's like, all right, your head-to-head is definitely important, but it is not the only thing that is important. We also have to consider resume, quality wins and losses outside of that one head-to-head incident. Like, there's a lot more that goes into it than just head-to-head. But in a situation like that, where they played head-to-head and the schedules are similar, the resumes and the results are similar. You know, Bama also had one loss, but it was on the road against a, at the time, now top, whatever Florida State ended up being, 8 before they bottomed out there. The difference there was enough that that was a silly decision, whereas I pointed out that, you know, Virginia beats Florida State, but they were 40th in the country. They jump up to 25, 24, wherever they were last week. Florida State was number 8 in the country. How do you rationalize getting Virginia behind Florida State when Virginia had a home win over Alabama and Virginia hadn't played anybody of note at that point? I don't think you can. There's the difference that you have to try to rationalize to make something happen, and I just don't think that they were capable of doing so, which made sense at the time. So, all of that being said, what is the biggest surprise in the top 25? And the reason that I ask that question is, every year when we talk about these preseason polls, my suggestion, though it will never work because the people who make the decisions are the TV executive people, and they are always going to make a decision that benefits the TV executive people. But I have said college football should not release its first rankings until week 6. Because by week 6, everybody will have gotten most of their cupcakeage out of the way. By week 6, everybody will have played at least a couple of conference games. And even if they play bad conference opponents out of the gate, at least you have an idea via round robining, transitive property of football. At least you have some idea as to what teams really are. On top of that, teams like, say, Louisville, who I told you coming in the season, like, I think this team's going to be good. Maybe not great, but I think they're going to be good. And I think they'll be good because Jeff Brohm understands how to pull the triggers on a pass-happy offense, and he went out and got a quarterback in Miller Moss. Well, here come the Louisville Cardinals. And yes, they lost the game over the weekend, but they lost a, to some degree, quality game over the weekend. And as a result of that, oh, by the way, in which Miller Moss went for, what was it, 356 and a handful of tutties in that game. Like, it is a loss that, while tough, you lost to a top 25 team, you lost by a field goal, you lost in overtime, and Miller Moss went 329 in this game. 339 the week before that, 316 the week before that. Like, they clicked. Now's the time where I think you get an accurate representation of Louisville. Now's the time that you get an accurate representation of Texas A&M. Is Texas A&M one of the best 5 teams in the country? Here's the thing that I have to remind myself sometimes. The ranking is to me. I have to tell myself, and some of you may disagree with the sentiment, I do not take the rankings as these are the best 25 teams in the country. I take the rankings as these are the best 25 performing teams, right? The rankings are, to me, a season-long and evolving power ranking that takes into consideration who you beat, how you beat them, when you beat them, where you beat them, the numbers you put up, the schedule that you have played, everything. And if two teams are close to each other and one of them beats the other heads up, sure, they get the edge. But this is about resume. This is about what you have done overall, top to bottom, left to right, up and down. And with that being said, I think Texas A&M has performed as one of the best five teams in the country. This is why week six is the week that I say I am fine with starting our poll now. Again, TV guys are going to make TV decisions. Number four Clemson versus number six LSU is a hell of a lot sexier than LSU and Clemson play in week one, and like maybe these teams are going to be really good. You stick a four and a six out there, and the casuals are going to go, oh, those are two good teams. They're in the top 10. They're in the top six. They must be good. And it makes the TV matchup sexier. But this is why I say week six is the reason.
I don't know if I've ever watched a game because of rankings.
I mean, again, you're not a casual.
Okay.
Right?
I've never went up, oh, look, this is this and this. I've got to, you know.
Right. You're not a casual. But say, hypothetically, my mom, who like watches college football, she's not a fan, but she watches it. She likes to tune in because she knows it's, you know, it's big for the little brother and I. We love college football. We talk about it all the time when we're together, whatever. She pays attention to it. So if she is trying to decide on a Saturday night when there's no new Grey's Anatomy on what game she's going to watch, it is most likely if she sees two teams that have a number out next to their name, she's going to check in on that game before she tunes in to watch Maryland play, I don't know, whoever, right? Michigan State. So that's why the TV people do it. It's not for you and me, great one. It's for the majority of fans who are casual viewers of college football. So this AP poll, which I don't really have a problem with. Do I think that Texas Tech is a better football team than Georgia? Not really. But I will say Texas Tech has beat two consecutive power teams in Oregon State and Utah. Maybe not great teams, but they hammered them. And then they went on the road to a decent Houston team, and they hammered them. Georgia, on the other hand, has the loss to Alabama and then wins over what? I mean, like the win over Tennessee was great. It was a 3-point win. You beat up on Kentucky, who's not a good football team, right? Like, I think it's fair to have A&M 5. I think it's fair to have the Red Raiders 9. I think it's fine to move Alabama to number 8. In fact, I would even go so far as to say Alabama, Indiana, I'm fine with where they are, because what Indiana did to the one good team they played, to me, outranks what Alabama did to the one good team they played. Well, two good teams they played, they lost to one. Indiana's only played one, beat them, but they dropped 70s on everybody else. Fine with that. This is why I think we should not have preseason rankings. This is why we should save our rankings until we get to week number six, because college football began this weekend, in my opinion, to sort itself out, and I think that the AP poll shows that. All right, let's take a break. We'll wrap up the show next. Rob Alonso, you, the Rob Brown Show, is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Monday Night Football, Chiefs on the road in Jacksonville, the butthole of America, to take on Trevor Lawrence and his Jacksonville Jaguars tonight. The Jags, a surprise team, unless you listen to Rob Brown when he told you, I think this team might be better this year. 3-1, the Chiefs 2-2 with opening week loss to the Chargers. They dropped week two, a Super Bowl rematch to the Eagles. They did exactly what they needed to do on the road at New York and then look much better as they decimated a Ravens team that was not as beat up then as they are now, but also they beat them up quite a bit. This game's interesting. Lonzo, your team is on the road favored by 3.5 points. So it is a just a touch over a field goal difference. The over-under in this game, an NFL average 45.5 points in this one. Your thoughts on this matchup this evening?
I am looking forward to finding out if they're going to play this week like they did last week, because last week was it was pretty good. You get a piece back on offense, but I heard earlier that that piece might be not there in Xavier Worthy. I heard on the overnight show that Xavier Worthy's ankle was swollen up for some reason.
Mm.
Put some ice on that thing. Get it ready for tonight. And I think just a week away from another return. So I think we're going to find out if you were right or not about Jacksonville. That's what I think. We're gonna find out how Trevor Lawrence performs with the way Kansas City's defense played last week. If they play that way this week, we're going to find out if Trevor has taken a step or not.
I think that is fair. I would
run the stinking ball, Chiefs. It's okay to run the ball.
I would point out that the Chiefs opened as a 2.5 point favorite. That money is now at 3.5. Now, for those of you who don't follow the gambling lines, this is the way it looks to me, and we will find out later on this afternoon and closer to the evening if this is prophetic or full of crap. Ordinarily, the lead up to a game, ordinarily, it is where the casual public money is. People who, they gamble on sports, but maybe it's not like a thing. The money you see come in the last 12 hours to kickoff, that is the people who live in Las Vegas and their job is gambling on sports. Like, that's how they make their money, is by wagering on sports. This is why there are two lines that I pay attention to. The line when it opens and the line within the last couple of hours before kickoff. Because when the line opens, that is usually Vegas giving you their honest thoughts on the game. Obviously, they open as much as a week before the game is played, so there's a lot of time for a lot of variables to come into play. That 2.5 may or may not have included knowledge that Xavier Worthy would or would not be banged up, maybe banged up, is definitely going to miss it, and it's being kept under wraps, whatever. A lot of people get paid a lot of good money to have channels to discover that information before people like you and me have it available to us. So the line opened at 2.5, which tells me that the odds makers in Las Vegas actually think this is a close game. Again, Jacksonville getting 3 at the crib. That means they believe Kansas City is about 5 points better than the Jags right now. So take that for what it is worth. Then,
right, ton of sources saying questionable.
Questionable. Then what happened is, as the line moved from 2.5 to 3.5, you had a bunch of casual bettors who looked and they went, oh, it's the Chiefs and the Jags. Like, obviously that's a beatdown. Let me grab this number while it is at 2.5. And if you are a Chiefs guy or a Chiefs bettor in this case, that is the play. Because it is more likely than not, I would have thought, with the knowledge that casual bettors almost always bet the line towards Kansas City, that line was going to grow. And now it has. Now it's moved from Kansas City minus 2.5 to 3.5. Meaning, if you bet this when it opened, Kansas City wins by a field goal, you win the bet. 24-21, 27-24, you win the bet. Now, if Kansas City wins 27-24, you lose the bet. That's what that one full point did. So the question mark for me is going to be, does this line stay put, which means the Vegas bettors are pretty split? does this line move towards Kansas City, meaning that the folks in Vegas who do this for a living are looking at this line and going, that's too low for the Chiefs after what they did to Baltimore last week? Or does it get pushed back in the last 12 hours to -3? Maybe the full point comes back to -2.5, which says that the folks out in Vegas genuinely believe that Jacksonville is a threat in this game. Right now, the majority of the money is in on the Chiefs. That's why it moved a point. But the majority of the money so far is casual money. The line that you will look at if this is interesting to you, not from a gambling perspective. I mean, it is from a gambling perspective. But I bring up gambling on this show not because you are all capable of doing it here, but because gambling lines give you a pretty good insight into what the folks that work behind the scenes believe is the most likely outcome. If we see this line shift back to Kansas City -3 or -2.5, that says there's a lot of bettors in Vegas, folks who have zero affiliation or sentimentality, they just bet based on what's going to win, believe that Jacksonville makes this a very close contest. And so then the question mark becomes, when we look at how the bets came in, right? Because it is there are two numbers you look at: percentage of bets that are made and percentage of money that is bet. So if you have 100 bets that come in for $100 on Kansas City, and you have one bet that comes in for $1 million on Jacksonville, well, 99% of the bets are on Kansas City, but 99% of the money is on Jacksonville. That means the people with bigger bankrolls, the people with bigger bank accounts, the people who spend more money on gambling. And again, you will have this impacted by people like Drake, who shows up and he bets $1 million on a game. And he's very clearly not good at it, but he's got money to burn. That does impact that. But the majority of that money is people who, again, live out in Las Vegas. This is what they do for a living. They make a lot of money doing this kind of stuff. So, again, this is an interesting game to me. Here's where it sits right now. 68% of the bets on the spread going to Kansas City. 83% of the money so far is also on the Chiefs. So that is a big sway. Here's one thing I would have also given you as a gambler as well. If I ever see 80%+ of the money come in on one side, I run to the other side. If 83% of the money is coming in on Kansas City and that line has only moved 1 point, that tells me that there is something going on, that Vegas has set a trap on the general public. They believe that they can take casual bettors for a whole lot of money if they can get Jacksonville to be within a field goal at the end of this game. And I think they will. I actually think this is a tight game. I'll pick Kansas City to win, but I do think this is a tighter game than people are giving it credit for. I have one question, which is, can Jacksonville's wide receivers get their heads out of their collective rectums and play good football? And if the answer is yes, I think Duval can make it interesting. Can make it interesting. Keep it within a possession throughout the course of the game. But if I got Brian Thomas out here just dropping footballs, if I got wide receivers for Jacksonville, by the way, and I pointed this out last week, and I haven't gotten a chance to go back and watch as much as I'd like, but through the first 3 weeks of the season, Jacksonville wide receivers have dropped 4 touchdown passes. Not like close. I mean, unguarded, open in the end zone, just dropped 4 touchdowns. Trevor Lawrence should be leading the NFL in touchdown passes. If they get that fixed, I absolutely think this is a one-possession game. If they don't, yeah, don't be shocked if Kansas City runs away with this thing tonight. I will take Kansas City to win. I'm not touching the cover. Not touching it, because I do think Jacksonville can keep this thing within a field goal and force a Kansas City walk-off at the end of the game.
It's pretty much how Kansas City usually wins the game.
It's also fair.
Do they ever cover, ever? I don't, in the last couple of years?
Occasionally.
Okay.
Usually in the playoffs, to be honest.
All right. The first thing is Xing is Quinshon Judkins.
I did see yesterday that Quinshon Judkins was, he was trending last night. And I believe it is because the first Browns running back with a 100-yard game in two or three seasons now? Like, first Browns running back to get to 100 yards in two or three seasons. That's not good if you're the Cleveland Browns. Not good. We've all banged him up for the quarterback. Turns out the running back sucks, too.
But good that they found one. That,
they found one.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Maybe that changes the game, but we'll find out.
Maybe it does. All right, the next thing that's axing is Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray axing because the Arizona Cardinals were a comedy of errors yesterday. And I will say, great one, this feels like a shtick for the show. It is not. We do not have a new Call of Duty dropping, but we do have a new Battlefield that is going to be dropping soon. And for many of us, and I don't know that Kyler Murray is or is not on this wagon, I have dropped off of Call of Duty. I have abandoned Call of Duty. It got too Fortnite-y for me. It's leaned too much into the silly stuff. Instead of just being a good war game I've always liked to play, the new Battlefield is going back to its roots. It is going to be a classic online multiplayer and single-player campaign, classic shoot-em-up war game. Kyler Murray's on video game watch. He's on video game watch officially, and if you watched that game yesterday, a game in which it was hilarious, to be honest with you, in multiple spots. Kyler Murray was in the shotgun, looked over to the sideline, his center snapped the ball, hit him right in the damn face, and here's the worst part, and I don't know if Zoe caught this because he hasn't made a joke about it, and I expected he would have. The ball hit him in the head, and his head rocked back like he got hit by a brick.
No,
like
not,
on a football?
I'm not making a joke out of it because a lot of people speculated he got a concussion, and it wouldn't shock me. I mean, I was lucky to get a broken neck from it. I mean, that thing nailed him.
And for the record, it was a rocket of a snap to the face mask. That's just bad. That's just bad.
It's like when you accidentally hit your kid with a snowball.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's not really.
And you have to do that thing where you laugh, but not out loud.
Yeah, it's not a hype joke, but it is. All right, the next thing it's Xing is Dwayne Johnson.
I know why Dwayne is Xing. Dwayne is Xing. Because they put $55 to $60 million into the new Dwayne movie, and it is on pace to make 10% of that. It is on pace to make $5 to $6 million on opening weekend. It got circled by everything else that came out this weekend. Dwayne, this is what you get for taking yourself too seriously. If you would have just been The Rock, you would have been great forever. Well, but instead, I've got John Cena out here whooping your ass in the ring and in the ratings.
Well, they say it's Oscar worthy.
I've heard it's a great movie.
Okay. Just no one's going to see it. You know what everyone did go to see, apparently? Making $46 million was Taylor Swift's
correct
thing that you were like, why would anyone want to go see that? No, they did.
Whoa. What I said was, why would I want to go see
it? Yeah. That's what it was.
Okay. I understand the Swift.
I apologize for saying that.
It's okay. I got no... Again, be entertained. Hell, if you want to go see Dwayne The Rock Johnson in a fat suit, but not a fat suit, like, have at it. But I get the Swifties going out of mass. And by the way, I listened to the album over the weekend. And the takeaway I had was this. If you're a Taylor Swift fan, you'll love it. And if you're not, you won't. I like Taylor Swift. But I listened to this album, and the wife and I were like six tracks deep. And I'm like, it's not for me. It's not that good. It's not that good.
So you're saying she's not good when she's happy?
No, quite the opposite. Okay. I'm saying that this one felt very, compared to what she's done in years gone by, where she was already accused that this felt super manufactured, and it felt very simplistic in the way that the lyrics were put together. It's not what we came to expect, but the Swifties love it, and that's their prerogative.
All right, last one, Mike McDaniel.
Mike McDaniel's, if he's not fired already, he will be today.
As soon as he started X, I'm like, okay, did he get fired? But it doesn't look like the Dolphins
fans are obviously up in arms and want him to be gone. I suspect that he will before the end of the day, if not today, definitely tomorrow. But I think he, Callahan, and Daboll are all out probably by the end of the week. Like, all three of them will probably, maybe not Callahan because they finally got the win, but I'd be shocked. It'll be shocked. Mike McDaniel, the postgame presser, was asked about being employed still, and he said, it can't continue to go on like this, and it's already gone on too long. Dolphins fans nationally agree. That's it for us. Thanks for being here. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you didn't, it's your own fault. Get a better taste in radio. Or come back tomorrow, and we'll try again. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. The Rob Brown Show's on the radio. We'll see you tomorrow back here on the Fan Upstate. Later!
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.